housing lender.
You're listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of people and land of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Weather for today, variable clouds with occasional snow showers, some accumulation, particularly in the northeastern part of Minnesota. Highs 19 to 32 degrees, south-south winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Evening lows tonight, 13 to 23 degrees with more snow possible. Now it's time for Morning Edition from National Public Radio.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President Trump has issued another threat to Minnesota. Writing online, he says if attacks continue on ICE agents, he will invoke the Insurrection Act. A federal agent shot and injured a Venezuelan immigrant last night in Minneapolis. Authorities say the ICE agent feared for his safety. Last week, an ICE agent there shot and killed Renee Macklin Good. NPR's Meg Anderson reports anti-immigration protests have grown to include high school students in neighboring St. Paul.
The students chanted and marched with signs that said things like, "Skipping our lessons to teach you one," and "We will not learn your hate." They ended at the Minnesota State Capitol. One student, 17-year-old Chisint Lee Quiroz, says she has had friends detained by immigration officers.
"We're fed up. We're tired. ICE is coming to our schools, and it's like nowhere is safe now. And honestly, that makes me really sad."
The day Good was killed, immigration officers showed up during the dismissal of a Minneapolis high school and released chemical irritants on some bystanders. Since then, hundreds more immigration officers have been deployed to the Twin Cities. Meg Anderson, NPR News.
The UN Security Council will hold an emergency meeting today on Iran and its deadly protests. Rights groups in the U.S. say more than 2,000 people have been killed. But Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi told Fox News that high death toll is exaggerated.
"I certainly, deny the numbers and figures they have said. It is an exaggeration. It is a misinformation campaign only to find excuses to do another aggression against Iran."
President Trump has threatened military action against Iran. New data show that signups for Affordable Care Act plans are down for the first time in 5 years. As NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin reports, the Trump administration has pulled millions of dollars from the marketplaces.
The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services says that 22.8 million people have picked an Affordable Care Act plan so far, though that number is not final. Health policy experts had been expecting many people to drop their insurance because premium costs are double on average what they were last year after enhanced federal subsidies expired at the end of the year. The 22.8 million number is about 3% lower than last year, not a dramatic drop. It's the first time enrollment has dropped in 5 years. Analysts also warn that the numbers don't reflect who has actually paid for their coverage. Some people, especially those who auto-renew, may drop their coverage once they get their first invoice. Selena Simmons-Duffin, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR. The Senate has rejected a war powers resolution that would limit President Trump's ability to order new military action in Venezuela. Vice President Vance had to break the 50-50 tie vote. Republicans Todd Young of Indiana and Josh Hawley of Missouri switched sides to support Trump's position, allowing the GOP to block the plan. President Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, says the second phase of the ceasefire in Gaza is getting started. Phase two is supposed to focus on demilitarization, governance of the territory, and reconstruction. U.S. officials say they've sent invitations to create an international body that will run Gaza. President Trump is supposed to choose who's on the board. Dinosaur ages have been estimated by using growth rings in their bones, one ring per year. Ari Daniel explains that may not be quite right.
To really confirm the ring counting approach, one would need to study live dinosaurs. The next best thing are their living relatives, including crocodiles.
Their skeletons
tell a story about how they grew.
University of Cape Town paleobiologist Anusia Chinsami Taran and her colleagues injected several crocs with an antibiotic which got taken up in their bones. When they later looked at those bones, they found more rings than expected. This may have implications for dinosaur bones, suggesting some dinos may have been younger when they perished than previously thought. Researchers not involved in the study, however, argue it's premature to throw out growth rings as annual age markers. For NPR News, I'm Ari Daniel.
You're listening to NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia. For 35 years, sharing what works in schools today and working to inspire new ways to learn tomorrow. More at edutopia.org.
You're listening to Morning Edition from National Public Radio here on KAXE. Thank you for listening this morning. I'm Kari Headland here with Jennifer Barr.
Support comes from Rapids Brewing Company, a place for gathering and community featuring live music multiple times a week, farm fresh food, and rotating beers from their own brew house. More information about their events, music, and menu at rapidsbrewingco.com.
Minnesota State Parks is offering free admission on Monday, January 19th. There are 75 parks and recreation areas across the state, so you can visit an old favorite or explore somewhere new. Variable clouds today with occasional snow showers, highs 19 to about 32 degrees. There is a weather alert for the Grand Rapids, Hibbing, and some of the northeastern part of our area. The snow squalls are possible this morning as snow moves through the area. Might see rapidly changing weather and road conditions, brief heavy snow, gusty winds. Quick snow accumulation of 1 to 3 inches is possible with snowfall rates up to a half an inch to 1 inch per hour. So could get a little snowy this morning. Just keep an eye on the weather and make sure you know where you're headed and what weather is coming that way. Coming up, we are having a conversation with Joshua Jones, but first we're going to play a little bit of a song from the new Josh Ritter. I know you've been a fan over the years, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. He's got this new album out, I Believe in You, My Honeydew, and he has this song that has a lot of northern Minnesota references to it.
Legend, Minnesota way back when, taken from the rich and given to your friends, and your friends were the poor, up and down the line, they might inherit the world a little bit at a time. There are places on the upper plains, no comfort's ever been, you made a holy mission out of laying siege to them. You were spotted in Bemidji, you escaped from Grand Marais, everywhere you wanted, there you wanted all the way. Dark days lead to dark nights, lead to dark years, no light. Take the farmer and his family, barely living day to day, and some mysterious illness caused his wife to waste away. Took the bottle that you left, and the door said take a drop. Your prayers have all been answered, now pick up your bed and walk. Take the tale of the banker man from Lake of the Woods. Like the devil himself had come to town, dressed up a snake as best he could. You chopped his tail, let him live, his neighbors burned his bags. He came to town in purple, now he's leaving in rags. Dark days lead to dark nights, lead to the dark years, no light.
We are listening to new music from Josh Ritter, very appropriate, Dark Days and Dark Nights. That's off his new album, I Believe in You, My Honeydew, which he recorded in Minnesota at Pachyderm Studios. Kind of fun to hear those references to Bemidji, Lake of the Woods, Grand Marais, from a musician like Josh Ritter.
Yeah. Very cool. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr with Kari Hedlund. And it is time for a bright spot, a chance to highlight good things happening in northern Minnesota. Joshua Jones joins us now. He was recently received the 2025 Virginia McKnight Binger Heart of Community Honor for his work as an environmental leader for Red Lake Youth. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Morning, Josh. Thanks for joining us this morning. I'm sorry, is it Josh or Joshua?
Yeah, whichever you want.
Okay.
Okay.
So, Joshua, you studied hydrogeology at BSU. First of all, can we go to the basics of hydrogeology and what that means?
Yeah, so basically the study of groundwater systems.
Okay. And now you run the internship program with the Red Lake Department of Natural Resources. Tell us about your work.
Yeah, so I was doing the hydrology position for the Red Lake DNR for a number of years, and then started doing the internship program. I was actually a part of the internship program. I began in 2016, and that's what led to me going to graduate school here at BSU, and kind of paying it forward. I've been hiring students that were going to BSU, kind of helping them with their beginning of their careers and getting some field and work experience in the Red Lake DNR. And yeah, then that kind of led to working and hiring youth workers. And then that led to another program that we started creating, outdoor recreation opportunities for the Red Lake community. And yeah, I just kind of kept growing from there. And that's what I'm doing now, almost full time. I still like to wear my hydrologist hat whenever I can, which isn't very often anymore. But yeah, I'm pretty much primarily focused on the youth work. And, the best comparison that I can make to what I do now is like the Civilian Conservation Corps. That's really kind of what we're doing up on Red Lake right now.
So talking about getting youth involved and, kind of leading them into potentially into a profession like this, how did you get started in and interested in hydrogeology?
Yeah, so I was, my joke I always tell is that I spent my formative years not forming, and I kind of bounced all over, lived in a whole bunch of different places. I worked about every different type of job you can imagine, and, nothing was really sticking with me when I was doing all these different things. And then I started back here at Bemidji State University. I got my two-year degree at Tallahassee Community College. And from there, I managed a 20-acre vineyard in Iowa. And, again, just kind of bouncing around. And then I my first course that I took at BSU was a hydrology course. And it was like a light bulb moment for me. I didn't even know that was a profession or a thing or, something I could do with my life. And from that moment on, I was very dedicated to, being a hydrologist. And now I'm not much of a hydrologist anymore, but it's still a very big interest of mine. And I guess I'm a hobbyist. Hydrologist is maybe a good way to put it.
So tell us a little bit more about your work with the youth. What kind of projects are you working on? And like right now, this time of year, are there things you're working on? Or is this more of a kind of summertime work? Or what have you been doing?
Yeah, so we've in the past I was working with the Obimadwa Gidiwimangidug program, and we one of our biggest projects was we cleaned up a beach area on Red Lake. We had a big beach party event. We had thousands of tribal members that came for our first event. It was a very, very successful, very, very popular event. What we're doing now with my youth, we're partnering with the Mandaji Charter School. So we're trying to provide some outdoor recreation, for the students. So beginning of this week, we're taking the kids out ice fishing. My youth workers and I, we're building a ice skating rink on one of the small lakes that's near the school. I just ordered a bunch of ice skates. So we're gonna get the kids out ice skating this winter. We've got a big project going up to Lake of the Woods. We're building a ricin camp on an island up there on some Red Lake territory. So we're going to be hopefully bringing some Red Lake community members up to Lake of the Woods this fall to harvest wild rice up there. So yeah, we're very busy. We got a lot of things going on, and yeah, every season we've got something to do.
Yeah. I know, we know awards aren't why you do the work, but you have recently received a few awards or honors, and that's got to feel good, at least, to be recognized in that way. Let's talk about the McKnight Award. You recently received the Virginia McKnight Binger Heart of Community Honor. So can you talk about that award?
So I got nominated by a couple of the people I work with some of the foundations here in Minnesota, and they told me I was nominated, and they told me I think there's a couple hundred people that normally get nominated, so I figured there's other people doing a lot cooler things than I'm doing, and didn't really give it much more thought than that. And when I found out I won, I was yeah, pretty surprised. And yeah, I'm definitely a someone that doesn't like the spotlight that much, and I was told there's going to be a lot of things like this, and doing the media tour, if you will. And but I am really excited about what we're doing. It is a especially in the times we're in today, it's good to get some good stories out there for people to hear. And I'm really proud of the youth that I have working for me and been working with. And I've got a couple that have been working with me now for 4 years, and seeing them grow and seeing them, become, young adults. And but yeah, I'm really proud of them. And I keep telling them this is our award. It's not just mine. I wouldn't have this award if it wasn't for them and the work they've been doing with me. So yeah, I'm grateful, I guess, is a good way to put it.
Yeah, you also were selected for the 2025 Initiators Fellowship. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, so that's another thing that kind of threw my hat in the ring and wasn't expecting to get it, I guess. but yeah, I'm doing a lot of work with the Red Lake youth, and I live here in Bemidji, and what I see is a lot of youth, native youth here in town that they're kind of fall through the cracks. They're not living on Leech Lake or Red Lake or White Earth. And what I'm doing on Red Lake, I want to be able to do on a some sort of scale here in Bemidji, and hire some of the youth here in town, get them to work, keep them busy, put some money in their pocket. So that's kind of a more of a long-term goal at this point, but something I want to kind of grow and build here in Bemidji as well. So yeah.
So that fellowship will allow you the kind of time and space and finances to look into doing more with that work.
Yep, for sure. Yep, guidance and all the things I need.
That's Joshua Jones on Bright Spot. You can hear that each week on KAXE. Thank you for doing this media blitz on KAXE. We appreciate the conversation with you, and just are interested to keep us posted. This is a really interesting opportunity for youth to get involved in this way too.
Definitely. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks, Joshua. This is the Thursday morning show on KAXE. I'm Kari Hedlund here with Jennifer Barr.
And the Bright Spot is made possible with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
We receive support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids. Featuring a scratch bakery, offering espresso, bubble tea, and more, empowering inclusion in community through employment, special orders available, and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
Saxim Bog near Meadowlands has a closer look at winter bird species, a series of programs this a week from Saturday, January 24th, and then Sunday, January 25th. You can learn about finches, owls, woodpeckers, and chickadees. Find more details and register for these programs at saxzim.org/events.
United Way Bemidji is offering assistance to those affected by last summer's derecho. If you need repairs to your home or need help navigating insurance coverage, you can fill out a form at unitedwaybemidji.org or contact their office.
Coming up before 9 o'clock, we're going to talk with Adam Bonahan, a voice contestant from that TV show. Minnesota singer-songwriter. He'll be performing this Saturday at the Rife Center in Grand Rapids. The 9 o'clock, it's Headwaters with DJ Dang.
Here are the Womack Sisters.
Say goodbye to Mrs. Wright. He missed his day, and she left that night. But I know.
Trying to tell him.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm A. Martinez. Verizon says a widespread outage affecting tens of thousands of customers has been resolved. Calling and data services were down for customers throughout the U.S. on Wednesday, including users on other services. Now, Verizon has apologized, but so far offered no explanation. So for more, we called up Lee McKnight. He's an associate professor in the School of Information Studies at Syracuse University who researches wireless grids. Professor McKnight, I'm glad we were able to get a hold of you, considering all the struggles people had yesterday. So how common is an outage? It was an outage and an outrage, I think, like the one we saw yesterday.
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me. I'm calling in from my Verizon phone.
nice.
So I'll just say, unfortunately, the outages are a frequent occurrence, a fact of life these days. For major telecommunications firms, if you just look, rewind the clock, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile have all been down over the last 18 months.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, yeah, AT&T reported outages too. I mean, how are their networks, AT&T and Verizon's networks, how are they connected?
Well, I've thought of an analogy that might help your listeners. Imagine not being able to get on I-95 between Boston and Washington, which was where a lot of the outages were concentrated. So they're just like, the on-ramps don't work. Every single day, these virtual networks are being rebuilt. They're software-defined networks. And if there's just something wrong and there's no on-ramp, you just can't connect the call. The network itself may be fine, but there's no way to get from here to there. So T-Mobile, AT&T's networks were fine, but if you tried to call over to Verizon, you couldn't get on.
Wow.
Or your number of other services weren't working.
So just one big frustrating mess, it sounds like. And there's still no official information on what causes. What do you think happened? What are the possibilities?
Well, I'd say we've seen this movie before, unfortunately. It's modern telecom networks are cloud networks. 5G networks are mainly like hundreds of different cloud services. The telecom companies haven't yet adjusted their training to that reality, that they're staff have to be expert, not just in cell towers and wireless like we think about, but about cloud services like AWS or Microsoft or Google. And so with some little mistake, a cloud misconfiguration is a phrase, it takes out one of these cloud services and now you can't get on the highway and you can't connect your call. And those one error can then cascade because these systems are so big and complicated. Oh, no. It takes out things happen like they did yesterday.
Yeah. I'm wondering, Professor, is it still worth it to have a home landline just in case?
Well, first, having a wireless or other separate, or like a backup network of some form, like thinking about what you would do in case of an outage, that's definitely worthwhile. I'll have to admit, I don't have a landline and I haven't had one in a long time myself personally, so I'm living at a certain risk, but there's other, you know, networks around me. So having a contingency plan is definitely worthwhile.
All right, Lee McKnight is an associate professor in the School of Information Studies at Syracuse University. Professor, thanks.
Thank you.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm A. Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin.
That's Morning Edition here on KAXE. I'm Kari Hedlund here with Jennifer Barr. Good Thursday morning.
Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to have the Up North Report, local news from our region. So lots of local stories and conversations for you to check out at our website, kaxe.org.
The world out the window looks like we have a black and white filter on today. There is going to be some snow showers moving through the area at some point this morning, and particularly within the northeastern part of our listening area, we're going to be seeing some accumulations possible today. Winds gusting up to 20 miles per hour from the south-southwest. So drifting snow is very possible, even if we don't see those snow showers come through. Highs 19 to 32 degrees, colder on the northeastern part of Minnesota, warmer in the northwestern portion of our listening area. Tonight, those evening lows around 13 to 23 degrees with more snow possible. Tomorrow, we see the temperatures dropping. That snow might continue into tomorrow morning, with highs starting in the mid-20s, and temperatures will be dropping tomorrow into the single digits throughout the day, with those winds continuing, switching from the northwest tomorrow up to 25 miles per hour.
Yeah, it looks like a chilly weekend ahead with, you know, highs maybe a few degrees above zero, and that's what we are in for.
It is January, and we've been pretty lucky. I mean, the fact that this week I was wearing a coat that I traditionally reserve for like the fall.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not complaining though. It was lovely.
I wouldn't mind a refresh of the snow situation.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I want a solid, like, give me 6 to 12 inches, man. That is what I'm looking for.
Like some sledding snowman,
yes,
kind of situation. You know, just one of those would be okay for the rest of the winter. I don't want like a lot of those kind of snow situations.
Well, and just to like bury the ice layer,
yep,
just deep enough so that skiing will be fun.
Mm-hmm. Sledding
and all those things. But with this layer so right under the surface, It's making it all a little questionable here.
That's right.
We've got an activity next weekend that we'd love for you to join us with. Whether or not we get that snow, there's going to be an activity, Ski Palooza, at Three Island Park in Bemidji on the 24th. That runs from noon to 3. There will be cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, fat tire bike, play music, or just swap stories around the fire. And you can bring a snack to share. You can find out more. We have an event up at our Facebook page.
Support for KAXE comes from Clackau Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making traditional old world styles of beer as well as modern classics for 8 years now. Their taproom is open Monday through Thursday, 3 to 8, Friday and Saturday, noon to 8, Sunday, noon to 6. More at clackaubrewing.com.
Now it's time for our Up North report here on KAXE.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. The Aiken School District will try for another referendum in April. Voters narrowly rejected two ballot questions in November. This time, the district will split its ask into three. Question one is to build a new pre-K through sixth grade school. Question two is to build a new transportation center. And the third question is to add another gym to the new elementary. The new school and transportation center were combined into a single question in the last election. It failed by about 200 votes. In November, instead of an extra gym, the district asked for a community wellness center. That failed by 440 votes. In total, the district's April ask will be about two-thirds the cost of their last try. Most of Rippleside Elementary is nearing 70 years old. Just addressing immediate maintenance needs would cost upwards of $11 million. At Monday's meeting, school board members noted that taxes will be going up for residents, whether the referendum passes or not.
We're going to have to fund it one way or another, and our one project or another. If it's not a new school, then it's going to either be a full remodel or a full build on the site. A full remodel, or if we're just going to keep kicking a can down the road, it's repairing it.
School districts can take on additional debt without voter approval for certain maintenance projects. Four Republican legislators talked cutting regulation, natural resources, energy, and fraud at the Grand Rapids Area Chamber of Commerce's January 8th lunch with legislators. Representative Roger Scraba of Ely, Representative Spencer Igo of Wabana Township, Representative Ben Davis of Merrifield, and Senator Steve Green of Boston answered questions from the chamber and two of the 70 or so attendees during the two-hour event. The lunch served as both a recap of last year's session and a preview of what's to come. Each legislator largely stuck to their typical talking points, unlocking critical minerals, lowering government spending, and energy affordability, to name a few. But those can still reveal where the lawmakers' heads are at as they prepare to return to St. Paul. The legislature is set to reconvene February 17th. The session comes at a particularly tense time for Minnesota, with widespread fraud concerns and a massive surge of federal immigration enforcement. It will also be the first time legislators all gather since Speaker Emerita Melissa Hortman was killed last summer. Scraba noted what lawmakers have endured in the last few years feels much different than their predecessors.
There's a lot of things that we still have to do. We can't just get frozen locked up because of all the sideshows that are happening, you know, and unfortunate or fortunate, whatever sideshows they are, but we have to remain focused on representing our districts.
While there was some partisan finger pointing, Igo and Scraba in particular sought to strike a bipartisan note. With the House split 50-50, votes from both parties are needed for any legislation to pass. Bemidji Mayor George Prince is being nationally recognized for his leadership amid disaster after hurricane-strength winds tore through the city and surrounding area last June. Larissa Donovan has the story.
The straight-line wind event on the night of the summer solstice knocked out power to thousands of residents and damaged hundreds of homes and businesses. Prince says he will accept the award, but on behalf of the entire community.
We know what the aftermath of the storm was for us, how critical and serious it was, how many people were involved, whether that was our emergency service personnel, the lines people that restored power, the United Way, community resource connections, neighbors helping neighbors. And so for me to say I want to stand above all of that is not anything I'm interested in.
The national award is presented by Leaders Link, a nonprofit that harnesses elected officials' disaster lessons to help other communities prepare for and recover from major crises. Prince was nominated for the award by the League of Minnesota Cities, with other nominees leading recoveries from wildfires, floods, tornadoes, and hurricanes. The three-judge panel wrote that Prince, quote, demonstrated exceptional leadership and resilience through the disaster that caused widespread destruction and power outages. Prince says the recovery effort continues to be underway for many Bemidji area businesses and homeowners. Larissa Donovan, KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Michelle Martin in Washington, D.C. Good morning. A federal agent shot a man in the leg Wednesday night in Minneapolis as protests against the Trump administration's aggressive tactics there continue. The Department of Homeland Security said the man was an immigrant and was fleeing a traffic stop. They say he struggled with the officer. Two other people joined the confrontation with a shovel and a broom. Then, according to DHS, the officer shot the initial suspect. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz addressed his state last night, shortly before news of the latest shooting.
Folks, I know it's scary, and I know it's absurd that we all have to be defending law and order, justice, and humanity, while also caring for our families and trying to do our jobs. So tonight, let me say once again to Donald Trump and Kristi Noem, end this occupation. You've done enough.
Civil rights lawyers say the administration is violating the rights of immigrants and protesters. Trump officials counter that they are lawfully enforcing immigration policy. NPR's Martin Costi has been reporting on what the legal line is for federal agents.
Yesterday was another day of angry scenes in Minneapolis as protesters confronted immigration officers. David Beer is watching these videos come in. He runs the immigration studies program at the libertarian think tank, the Cato Institute. He's on the lookout for scenes of federal officers who stop people for, quote, immigration checks, such as this moment earlier this week in a snowy Minneapolis neighborhood.
Here, but where were
and
you born?
I am not going to give you an ID.
Then we're going to put you in the vehicle until I can ID you.
I belong here. I should be walking around here free. I shouldn't be afraid in my life at this point.
Ma'am?
This is beyond anything we've seen play out in the interior of the United States, where you have essentially people being forced to produce their documents.
Beer says checking people based on characteristics such as skin color or jobs or accents wouldn't normally fly in a city away from the border. But right now it does. In September, the Supreme Court allowed such stops to go on while a lawsuit challenging them works its way through appeals.
You know, we'll see what the Supreme Court ultimately says, but so far they've been willing to allow them to continue, and we're seeing the consequences of it, which is a lot of hostile, aggressive interactions with people on the street.
When it comes to protests, the Trump administration is increasingly referring to such actions as criminal. Here's DHS Secretary Kristi Noem on CNN recently talking about the fatal shooting of Renee Macklin Good during a confrontation with ICE in Minneapolis.
We will continue to look at this individual and what her motivations were. We know that there was, throughout that morning, she had harassed and impeded law enforcement operations.
And on social media, activists have been posting videos of ICE officers who threatened to arrest them just because they're following them.
So when we leave the Home Depot and we continue to see this car follow us, we're going to assume you're following us. So
is that illegal, though?
Yeah, it is. It is, actually. So that's why I'm warning you. If you continue to follow us, you both will be arrested.
It's not illegal to follow officers, but
there is a legitimate officer safety issue for the ICE agents when they discover people are following them.
Jim Bierman is president of the Future Policing Institute and a former police chief in Redlands, California. He says police are sometimes ambushed, so he would tell his officers to try to find out why they're being followed. He would not tell his officers to threaten arrest. Looking at the Twin Cities, he worries about the current hostility between the feds and local leaders and what that might mean if somebody sees an ICE arrest and decides to call Minneapolis cops.
They've got to go out and verify that these are real federal agents that are scooping this person up. So I think they're going to go. But it's going to get complicated. This is a very messy situation.
Minnesota has cited this lack of coordination between feds and local police in a lawsuit to stop this immigration enforcement surge. And there have been other signs of potential trouble around the country, as the Philadelphia sheriff last week threatened to arrest ICE agents who break the law, and California banned ICE officers from wearing masks. Bierman says he hopes a clash between locals and the feds can be avoided, given, as he puts it, all the testosterone floating around. Martin Costi, NPR News.
Let's take a closer look now at the general public's rights during encounters with law enforcement, as well as what law enforcement personnel can and cannot do. Paul Butler's on the line with us. He's a former federal prosecutor and a professor of law at Georgetown University. All right, so Paul, when it comes to encounters with police or federal agents, do U.S. citizens have different rights than, say, legal residents or undocumented immigrants?
We don't. The Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution places restrictions on the power of police, and it talks about the rights of the people, not just citizens. The Supreme Court has said that means everyone who is part of the national community, including people who live and work here without legal documents.
For anyone that is dealing with a federal agent or police, there is maybe a bit of an intimidation factor in that they're an authoritative figure, right? And so sometimes maybe, you know, you don't understand your rights, or maybe you're afraid to express them.
If you get stopped by law enforcement, the most important question to ask is, am I free to go? Unless the police have a legal reason to detain you, they have to say yes, and then you can just walk away. But cops aren't required to tell you this, and sometimes people feel like they have to cooperate, even if they don't want to.
Paul, when it comes to the rights that people have when they have an encounter with law enforcement, how does it differ between, say, being in public or being inside your car or your home?
There's a difference between all three of those. In public, the police have the most rights. They typically don't need a warrant to detain you or to arrest you. If you're in your house, you have the most protection, and typically there, the police have to have both probable cause that there is evidence of a crime or a suspect in a home and a warrant. In a car, you have the fewest rights.
What do you make of the Trump administration's deployment of federal agents in the U.S. cities and the approach that ICE is taking in Minneapolis, for example, and in other cities?
After the murder of George Floyd, there were many reforms put in place that seem to have improved relationships between police officers and the communities they serve. And now it seems like we're going backwards. And that's not just bad for civil rights or racial justice. It's bad for public safety. The police solve the most serious cases not by chasing bad guys, but by talking to people to get information. And if people don't want to cooperate with police because they feel like they're violent or brutal or out to get their friends and neighbors, that makes everyone less safe.
Paul Butler is a former federal prosecutor and a professor of law at Georgetown University. Paul, thank you very much for the advice.
You're welcome.
This is NPR News.
This is KAXE. I'm Kari Hedlund here on this Thursday morning show with Jennifer Barr. Good morning.
We receive support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
The Cohasset Parks and Rec Department has snowshoe hikes at Tioga Recreation Area Mondays and Thursdays at 1:30, meaning the bike trail parking lot. City will provide snowshoes if you don't have them. All experience is welcome. Adam Bonahan is a songwriter and musician from the Twin Cities. He was on The Voice in 2024 and was in the top 8 contestants. He is performing at the Rife Center in Grand Rapids this Saturday. Adam joins us now on the Thursday morning show. Good morning, Adam. Don't forget. Oh, you look at you unmuted right in time. Good job.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there.
How are you
morning.
Doing this morning?
How's it going?
Good, good. You doing all right? Are you
I'm doing all right.
Are you in the metro area?
Trying to keep safe.
Yeah.
I am. I'm in Uptown Minneapolis. So we've been like talking with communities and, you know, just trying to stay safe out here, you know.
Yeah. Well, Adam, you are making your way up north this weekend. It's going to be cold. I know you're used to that. But let's start with your, you know, you had this, you were just on The Voice in 2024. But when you obviously got into music, much before that, can you tell us how you got into music?
Yeah. So my mother was a BBC was sorry, I'm just a little early in the morning. My mother was a violinist for the BBC Orchestra when I was before I was born, and my dad was a jazz guitarist, and I've always kind of felt connected to music. And when I was a young boy, I used to sing for my mother, just like songs. When we were living in Israel, I used to sing little Israeli songs for her. And then when we moved to England, I sang, you know, her favorites like Joni Mitchell and the Beatles and James Taylor. And then eventually I found my own voice and realized how much I absolutely loved music, and started writing when I was very young. Probably around 10 is when I started writing music. And then I evolved into the, you know, this sort of dirty soul that I have coined on the show. Like it's sort of a mix of gritty soul, like classic soul and Motown and everything under one umbrella, just like making it like very gritty and funky. Yeah.
So what was the impetus or process for you to get on The Voice?
Oh, wow. So I initially, when I first auditioned, it was a long time ago, and I was in a band in New York called On the Sun, and somebody had invited me to do an open mic that was hosted by The Voice in New York at Rockwood, what was then Rockwood Music Hall, which unfortunately closed after the pandemic. And I did the open mic, and there were a few voice contestants there, and they had sent a video of me doing the open mic to the producers, and they're like, check this guy out. And they, you know, sent that to them. And I got called in to do an audition, which I didn't get. But the producer really, really liked my music. Like he was singing like one of my songs as I walked in the room, and he was like, oh, I really like your music. I don't think this was a great audition, but let me come back another time. And then the pandemic hit, and I, you know, we all squirreled away. And then I was coming up on 40, and I was like, I need to move forward. And I messaged that producer, and I said, hey, I'd really love to do the, try being on The Voice again. He's like, yeah, send me 3 videos and let me take a look at them. And I sent them to him, and like basically it was pretty quick after that I was on The Voice. Yeah.
Man, you just got to shoot your shot. I love that.
Yeah.
So you're an original songwriter. You write your own music. What is that like going, you know, this huge opportunity to go in front of an audience like The Voice and the nation in that way? And you're singing songs that are familiar to that audience, not your own personal work. Kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so it is really hard, because one of the main things is if you play your own music on the show, then they kind of like, they almost own it in a way. So I try to avoid playing any of my own music. And some people do, like some people ask if they can play their own music, but I...
As in like the copy, like sort of like the copyright around the music?
Exactly, right, yeah. Mm. So like I was trying to avoid, and there were a couple of times where I almost played a couple of my songs, because the band was like, because I have a Star Trek R&B song album that I've been working on, and
R&B?
Yeah. as you can see, well,
I haven't heard the genre
before. Audience can't see, but behind me, I'm very nerdy. And
got some great
posters. I have a Star Trek R&B album that I've been working on that I'm probably going to release this year. And I told the band this, and they were like, "Oh, can we hear it?" And I almost started playing it, and I was looking around. I mean, I'm on all these cameras, and I was like, maybe later." So it's you want to try to avoid your own original music, but it is like it is. You know, I've been a wedding singer for like 15 years now, so you know, I'm used to playing other people's songs. I'm used to like getting really excited about it. Actually, this was more exciting for me because I got to sing the songs that I wanted to hear, you know, like instead of, you know, when I do weddings, it's always like top 40 or like classic songs that the bride and groom want to hear. And this was music that I wanted to listen to and I wanted to like, you know, sing. And, you know, they have a really good team out there that really talks to you about like what makes the most sense for like the crowd and who would really enjoy it, and also what makes the most sense for me personally as well.
Your voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So you do have control though over what songs, I mean, like you ultimately get to help choose what songs you're singing at these.
Yeah. So it's a really, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it, but it's a really, it's a really interesting process because you give them all the songs that you really enjoy, and then they tell you like, well, this isn't going to be popular enough. This isn't going to be like big enough. And then we go through a process with the song curator, who is just like the most incredible. Clyde is one of the most amazing people. And we basically like narrow it down, and we have to, once we have a coach, we have to like the coach will have a whole list of suggestions. And sometimes I'll you know, like I have like, The three people with creative control are, well, I guess the four, but the three people are Clyde, who's the song curator, your coach, and you. So like you really like, it's a conversation, and you talk about what you want to do. And sometimes there are a couple songs that I didn't want to do and I ended up not doing. So yeah, there's some control. I won't say what those songs are because I do like them, but I didn't want to do them on television. You.
Well, and I would assume that there's a little correlation, like as far as the game of it, a little correlation between those songs, like trying to find songs that are familiar enough to the audience that they're going to get behind and then want to vote for you for. So I imagine
that's
part of it too.
Well, that's the thing. I wanted to do some Alan Stone songs. I wanted to do some like Ray LaMontagne songs. I wanted to do some Marcus King songs, but unfortunately they're not as popular as like the, you know, the Chris Stapleton or the Black Pumas. And, you know, not to say they're not popular, they're very popular, but just like they wanted something that I could like instantly, that the audience could instantly recognize.
Yep.
And so that was kind of a rough
The KAXE audience would have totally gotten behind those songs.
I appreciate that so much. And that's what I'll be performing at the Rife Center. So
great. let's talk a little bit about your coach.
Yeah, Reba McEntire. So contestants on The Voice get paired with these celebrity coaches, and you were with Reba McEntire. What was that like?
It's funny. I explained this to Reba. When I first moved back to the States, I moved to Houston, Texas, and people didn't understand my voice. They didn't understand my accent. And so I had to learn how to speak, you know, American. and so I watched a lot of TV shows like Grace Under Fire and Reba's show. And so like I told her this when I was on there, like I learned how to speak in an American accent by watching Reba, and she's exactly what you'd expect from all of her shows. Like I watched Shucked. I went to see Shucked on at the Orpheum the other day, and I was listening to I was watching the show, and I was like, this is just like Reba. And I realized that Reba, I looked at the playbill, and Reba's one of the producers, because like she's exactly what you expect. Like you watch her show, you see she's like sweet and sassy and like so funny in person, as well as exactly what she says on the tin. Exactly yeah. That. Yeah.
Her voice is strong, if you notice that from the play.
Yeah.
And I love those 90s references. I watched both of those shows as a youth.
yeah.
So you're playing the show on Saturday at the Rife. You alluded a little bit to it, but what is it, a solo show? Do you, can you kind of talk about what's going to be happening on Saturday?
Yeah, so I'm bringing up my from the Twin Cities. I'm bringing up my 8-piece band. We're going to be playing a lot of really funky music that I've written, and a couple of the songs that you might know from that I did on The Voice. And basically, we're just trying to like, it's gonna be like a conversation. I'm going to like talk about all my writing process, my experiences, and I'm going to like walk it through and really have a good time with the audience. Basically, that's what I'm there to do, and really like have an exciting like get people moving and shaking in their seats, you know.
That is Adam Bonahan. See him live this Saturday night at the Rife Center in Grand Rapids. Thanks so much for talking with us and making time. And the early conversation, we know, is not always easy, especially for musicians. So appreciate your brain.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Adam. Thanks. See you Saturday. Yep.
Take care.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
This is Adam singing here in the background. You can see him, like we said, this Saturday. And you are listening to the Thursday Morning Show. I'm Kari Hedlund here with Jennifer Barr, and we appreciate you.
We sure do. We're so glad you're listening and joining us this morning. Support comes from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org.
And we receive support from the Mental Health Crisis Response Team of Itasca County. This crisis intervention service is a program, a first call for help 211, and provides free crisis assessments, stabilization services, referrals, and resourcing to residents of any age who are in crisis. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by dialing 211.
Deep Portage Learning Center in Hackensack has their annual winter rendezvous on Saturday, January 24th. You can enjoy a day of outdoor winter activities such as axe throwing, snow snakes, and more. Registration starts at 9, games until 2. There's a chili feed in there at noon. Find more info at deep-portage.org.
Chair has a free community meal this Sunday at their location on Chestnut Street in downtown Virginia from noon to 3. The event also offers food and clothing distribution to those in need. You have items to donate, you can bring them to Chair at any time.
Support for KAXE comes from UPM Blandin Paper, a provider of renewable material solutions with a focus on sustainability and innovation. Additional information at upm.com.
The Winter Lecture Series continues at the Forest History Center in Grand Rapids on Saturday at 1:00. Author Pete Carroll will talk about innovations in mine land management that have led to ecological restoration.
And tomorrow on the Friday Morning Show at 8:45, we're going to talk with Brian French from the Forest History Center, get kind of a look at the rest of the speakers in that series as well.
And then coming up in just a moment, we've got Headwaters with DJ Dang and World Cafe at 11 o'clock. And at 1 o'clock, you are on the river. Pat Miller is your host this afternoon from 1 to 4 o'clock. Current temperatures around the area, 11 degrees in Brainerd, Hibbing, possibly seeing some snow showers at 7 degrees. It says snow in Grand Rapids at 11. I'm not seeing snow out our window, but there is a system currently overhead just starting in the Deer River area through Hibbing in Virginia and Grand Rapids. And we will be seeing some snow today. Variable clouds, occasional snow showers, highs 19 to 32 degrees, south-southwest winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Watch that gusting snow, especially in the northeastern portion of our listening area. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org. We've got our question of the week this week, which is, what are your favorite games? We'd love to hear from you. You can text us 218-326-1234. And a belated good morning to Mary from Cass Lake, who sent in her morning wishes earlier this morning. It's time for Headwaters with DJ Dang.